Good afternoon. I'm Ed Ellinger. I'm the Commissioner of Health in the state of Minnesota. And it's sort of introductory comments. I'd like to sort of go back and of the people that I've seen in this audience are sort of a reflection of where I've been. So Sharon Moffitt is from ASTO, and that's my current job for the last couple of years being Health Commissioner. And then Julie Sanum is here from Boynton Health Service at the University of Minnesota, and I worked for 16 years in college health. I think I'm probably the only college health director who's gone on to be a state health officer, but it was a great training for that. And then Glenn Bartlett is here from Hershey, and it's sort of my Minneapolis Health Department days. I worked for a local health department and got involved with the MCH section of APHA and worked with Glenn. And then Des Runyon from the Clinical Scholars Program when I was at the University of North Carolina in the Clinical Scholars Program. So it's nice to see all of these folks and sort of go back over the history of where I've been and now being part of this panel. And I wish I had heard the presentations ahead of time, because I think I would have redone my slides in a whole different way from what they have. But I was actually thinking about that thing, and so as you were talking, Bob, I was thinking about McLean's "A River Runs Through It," and the history and the peasant come together, and all this stuff goes on, and a river runs through it. And we actually use that metaphor when I talk about public health, because we have a community, and the community has land and water, and it has businesses, and it has residential areas, and it has recreation areas, and so all of the community is that context, and a river runs through it. And I think we do really have to pay attention to all of those pieces. So it is good to be here and give my little part of this, but I do want to highlight the fact that this is the birthday of William Durant, and he wrote The Story of Civilization. I think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about children. He said, "It is a mistake to think that the past is dead. Nothing that has ever happened is quite without influence at this moment. You are what you are because of what you have been, because of your heredity stretching back into forgotten generations, because of every element of environment that has affected you. So with a city, a country, and a race. It is a past, and it cannot be understood without it." And so I think about all of that history. Sort of we're talking about trauma and what goes on as in child development, but also in my position as health commissioner, I think about a lot of other things that went on in our state and traumatic. And on this day in history, in 151 years ago, 303 Dakota warriors were sentenced to death because of an uprising where they killed a bunch of white settlers. And then a month or so later, 38 of those Indians were hung. The largest mass execution in the United States history occurred 60 miles south of the Twin Cities. And I say that because we are still responding to that trauma that occurred 151 years ago. Fortunately, a year ago, the governor made a statement apologizing for what the Governor Ramsey at the time, 150 years ago, had said about the Indians, and he apologized. And it was very healing. But it is still affecting everything that happens in our community. So there's some historical trauma, that there's adverse cultural experiences, those ACEs, that different kind of ACE, and that we have to pay attention to when we're dealing with all of the things that go on. So it's that context, that historical context, not just that single river, but it's the context that we have. On the other hand, it also, on this election day, it is the anniversary of Susan B. Anthony being fined $100 for voting, and three years later, she was arrested for attempting to vote. And on this day in 1919, Maine ratified the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. So I think on this day, we should celebrate the fact of what I think is the greatest public health achievement of the 20th century, women getting the right to vote. I think that is one of those things that is a policy change. And I say I think it's the biggest public health achievement because I just look at maternal mortality rates. Look what happened. The year after women got the right to vote, maternal mortality started dropping. And I'm sure that's causal. but it is because women had the right to vote that the politicians decided that they would pay attention to them, and those of us in the room, what happened in 1920 when the Sheppard-Towner Act was passed, which was the first public grant and aid program. It helped develop MCH units, got some of the data pieces were put together, public health. I mean, all of these things got started, I think, because of the fact that women got the right to vote. So it talks about policies. But for me, when I think about that, I think it also transformed what we in public health need, how we need to engage the community, what we need to think about. I think that women's right to vote demonstrated the need to engage all of the population in creating health. No one should be left out. Everything has to be part of that community. And it demonstrated the power that if you got people engaged, and you need, they help to create the conditions. And if they're given power, where they come together and have some power, they can actually change the conditions. And I also think that it demonstrates the fact that you can start to change the conversation about what creates health. And certainly the data that we've seen today from the adverse childhood experiences has helped really change the conversation about what creates health or what interferes with health. And Bob, I think you talked about some of the things that actually help to create health. And that it's more than just the physical and social conditions. It's policies and systems and the physical and social environment. All of those are part of that. And so we're using that framework about the fact that we do have some historical trauma, we do have some individual traumas, but we have communities that we really want to empower, we want to engage, we want to work on changing the policy system and environment in our state. So we're using that sort of framework as we develop our Healthy Minnesota 2020, our plan or our framework for what we want to do over the next 10 years in Minnesota. What we do is we try to meaningfully engage and empower communities, not just gather information from them, but actually engage them actively so they help have the conversation about what we want to look at and what we want to do together. And we help to change the conversation about what creates health from that model of, you know, as most people think, it's all medical care, but no, it's a lot more than that. And we've been purposefully trying to develop a narrative in as we change that conversation. So we engage folks to say, let us create a narrative about what's healthy in your community, what creates health in your community, so that you actually own the narrative and you can help us as a community talk about where we want to go as a community. So that's the framework that we're doing it. And this is the, as we put together a Healthy Minnesota framework, this is what we started out with, you know, from Antoine de Exupéry. If you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. It is really trying to have a much more optimistic, futuristic, positive approach of what are the opportunities that are out there. What can we create collectively? What can we as a community come together to create and make better? So that's the form. And so when we even collect our data, when we put together our assessment, the community needs assessment for the community, certainly we have all the data about the problems and the diseases and the outcomes. We put those in part two. We don't lead with that. In fact, what we focus on are the conditions and factors that help create and assure health. So we look at the people and the place, the physical, the people and the environment. You know, all of the things that we have. We've got a great state in Minnesota, a lot of things that enhance health. And look at the opportunity for health, the social and the economic and the community factors that really influence health. And then the ways that individuals within that can act to protect and improve their health. So we have the opportunities there. And at the end, then we put all of the problems because we do have to address those. But so with that, in our framework, this is the framework with our Healthy Minnesota 2020, that we have out there that has really been bought into by all of the local public health departments throughout the state and many of the community agencies that work with us, because this planning process, this conversation was not just with public health, but it was with multiple community partners throughout the state who have come up with the narrative, who helped us develop this plan. And the themes that are on the left certainly starts with capitalize on the opportunity to influence health in early childhood, which are community recognition that we really have to focus on early childhood as important for our state to move forward. So that's where we've done a lot of the work, and I'll go over some of the data, but not very much because we've already seen some of it, where the ACEs stuff comes in that has really been powerful in helping us realize what we need to do to really maximize that opportunity. And what I like is that as we've had this community conversation, fact, being a pediatrician and an MCH professional, I love the fact that capitalize on that opportunity for health in early childhood. It warms my soul. The second bubble is assure that the opportunity to be healthy is available everywhere and for everyone. This really means, again, that all people have to be involved, all communities need to be involved. And certainly in our state, one of the huge problems that we have, we're one of the healthiest states in the country, but we have some of the greatest disparities in the country. And so we really need to address disparities. We have some historical reasons why we have disparities. We have some current reasons why we have disparities. And those are the things that we really have to focus on. And so health equity is at the core of everything that we do. And then strengthen communities to create their own healthy futures. This, for me, is what I think is what public health is all about now. My job as state health commissioner is to empower communities to take ownership of health and create the conditions. And my job is to help them do that. It's not to tell them what to do, but it's to support them in what they do. And that's really being the basis for what we're trying to do in health reform, is actually have communities own health, give them the power to determine where the resources go between medical care, public health, social service, housing, transportation, education, so the community can get to decide. And the indicators that we're using really reflect some of the indicators that you've heard about from the previous presenters. Certainly prenatal care is one of those indicators, breastfeeding, but also food security. On-time high school completion, per capita income is certainly a public health indicator for us. The sense of safety, small business development, home ownership, and incarceration justice. So those are the factors, as we're talking about health in our state, that the community themselves came up with those indicators. And then our outcomes that we're looking at are the things that you would think about in terms of social determinants: improved lifetime health, reduced health disparities, more employment success, healthier relationships, stable and more cohesive communities, stronger and more stable families, better education outcomes. That is what we're going to that's what the communities want in terms of if they're going to have a healthy community. That's what they want. They don't want necessarily more hospitals and more clinics. They want improved lifetime health. They want no disparities. They want more employment. They want healthier relationships, and on and on. That's what the buy-in that we've got. That's where we're using our whole approach to create health. And it really fits in with the CDC's Essentials for Childhood, the safe, stable, and nurturing relationships. You know, we raise awareness and commitment, and that's where, you know, we're partnering with others behind this overall vision. We're using data, because we're getting a lot of data with each of those indicators. We're creating a context for healthy children through norms and creating a context for policies. So what we're doing, actually, I didn't realize it at the time, but we fit in very well with your framework, and we're just using different words to do that. So I will go over, so we did, as part of our data collection, we do the BRFSS, we have an ACE module, and we have a social SES, social, whatever that module is, about social economic indicators, and so we've done that, and so, and it's been very powerful. This graphic actually has been very powerful for us in educating folks about the fact that, you know, have all of those adverse childhood experiences, and it leads to a whole variety of problems all the way up to early death, and just sort of one visual, with all of the background information we've got. This is just trying to get the message across, to tell the story about, you know, the tip of the iceberg, the tip of the pyramid is death, but down below is all of the things that we have to influence. And Minnesota, like every place else, 55% of Minnesotans have at least one ACE. And here's the breakdown of that. And like was pointed out, you know, as the more ACEs you have, the less likely you are to say that you have good or excellent health. The more ACEs you have, more likely you are to say your health is fair or poor. And certainly, as was pointed out, again, the more ACEs you have, the more likely you are to have depression and anxiety and that linear relationship. Minnesota is just like every place else. Same thing with some of the behaviors, drinking, high-risk drinking, chronic drinking, smoking, follows the same pattern. And chronic health conditions, again, asthma and obesity, we didn't find the same pattern in diabetes, but it may not have been long enough. And our sample was about 15,000 people in the state. It may demonstrate itself a little bit farther on as the obesity leads to more obesity or to more diabetes. We did the crossed with all of the social economic indicators. And again, pointed out what has been mentioned before, that if you have less than a high school education, you're 2.3 times more likely to have five or more ACEs. That if you've never been married, 2.2 times the likelihood of having five or more ACEs. And it was really nice because in our state we had the referendum, a constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage, and I was able to write an editorial for the Star Tribune, the local paper, on the health benefits of marriage, and got a lot of attention and pointed out the fact to people that, you know, those relationships are really important and that they relate to health, and it is reflected in some of our data. Unemployed. If you're not employed, you have more chance of being having more ACEs. Same thing with the rent. If you're always worried about your mortgage or you have food insecurity, all of those factors really play into the fact that ACEs really have an impact on your long-term health and environment. And certainly, the race, ethnicity breakdown, if you're Asian and white, you know, you have less, you're less likely to have five ACEs or more. But if you're black or American Indian, your ACE scores are really quite high. So it reflects the fact that we have a lot of work to do throughout the continuum, particularly in early childhood, about that. And so with those ACEs, what we're doing is we're using ACEs to inform everything that we do in Minnesota. We have this Healthy Minnesota 2020 framework, which I talked to you about. We also have a children's cabinet where we have the Commissioner of Education, the Commissioner of Human Services, and myself, really using ACEs in a series of events the program to build power for babies, we're talking, because we're looking a lot at how do we get power into the hands of the people who can actually make changes, and it's sort of a prenatal to three. We're looking to teen pregnancy. We're using that ACEs as part of that Children's Cabinet Initiative with intergenerational work on teen pregnancy. Our work with American Indians, they recognize both the current trauma, but the historical trauma, and it's been very powerful in terms of trying to unpack what we need to do to address American Indian health. Our infant mortality work through the COIN, our statewide health improvement program, which is a sort of like Massachusetts Trust Fund. We have dollars where we spend throughout the state on changing policy, system, environment, again, based on the opportunities for early childhood is big with that. And our SIM, we got a SIM grant, State Innovation Model Grant, where we are actually trying to integrate all of these things in a more comprehensive approach. That's our way of doing health reform. It's trying to integrate medical care, public health, social service, education, transportation, housing, under the ownership and control of local communities, not under the control of the healthcare system or under the control of the public health system, but actually under the control of the community. And at the basis of all of it, we're developing a health equity report, which again is the major factor we have in our state that's impacting health. And so we've developed and learning about sociograms and all of the impact, things that have to do, making a huge commitment, and again, having a broad community conversation about equity, having a broad community conversation about race and racism, having a broad community conversation about who needs to be at the table, who needs to have the power to change the policy system and environment in our community. So I'll end with Ella Wheeler Wilcox. She's an author, and she said, "Laugh and the world laughs with you, and weep and you weep alone." But I think the quotation for today is, "One ship drives east and another drives west. With the selfsame winds that flow, 'tis the set of sails and not the gales which tells us the way to go." We're in a time of transition. The winds are blowing in all different directions, but we can move forward. We have the tools to move forward. We have the power to move forward. We just have to set the sails in the right direction. We have to set the rudder in the right direction, and together we will do it, because we have a lot of things that are unacceptable. Public health tells us what's unacceptable, but it also tells us what we need to do collectively, and that's where our community thing power comes in, and that's why it's nice to have partners like these at the table to try to move a health equity agenda in our state and throughout the country. Thanks.